Hello, you're listening to Spoiler.
Build.
Film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
And excitement spent.
So, I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me on the podcast is Anthony Evans.
How do you do?
Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And Jamie Thomas.
Ish.
What was that, sorry?
I'm exhausted already. We haven't even started talking about this yet.
Well, in fairness to you, we've covered this ground before because we have already attempted to review this week's film, Electric Dreams, and we put off the redo for a while. And we finally went, do you know what? We should do it. We're not going to be defeated just because the computers we used to record rebelled against us because they knew that the film was about sentient computers and they didn't want us slagging them off. They decided to ruin our audio recording, so we didn't have to redo it again. We could have just chucked it in. Should we chuck it in, guys?
We not bother? Fuck it.
It's a terrible film. No, we bloody watched it. We've watched Electric Dreams again, probably about a year on. And
I was going to say, we had to give it a year's gap to try it again.
Yeah, we just couldn't just... Once we said some funny stuff. There's a bit of the old podcast remaining, so I might chuck a bit in if we say anything particularly worthwhile. But, yeah, we're covering old ground, so that's going to skew our perspective a little. But originally it was Anthony's pick, so I guess he can give the details so you don't get your Electric Dreams confused with your real dreams. I don't know. Anthony?
Yes, okay. So Electric Dreams from 1984 is a self-proclaimed fairy tale for computers, whatever that means, and is about the relationship and romantic rivalry between a mild-mannered architect and his sentient PC over their new cello-playing neighbour. It was the feature film debut of director Steve Barron, who went on to direct such mixed fare as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Coneheads, and Mike Bassett, England Manager. And the film was written and produced by Rusty Lemorand. It stars, Lenny Von Dolan, Virginia Madsen, Maxwell Caulfield, and the voice of Bud Cort. The film is probably most notable for its soundtrack, which includes music from Jeff Lynne, Culture Club, Heaven 17, and Phil Oakley, and for having Giorgio Moroder as its music supervisor. So not remembered for its filmic quality. But I'm sure we'll get into that.
I was going to say, it's also one of those films where only one of the three leads went on to have much of a career after it, which is Virginia Madsen.
Yeah, but it's basically like the main guy in it is like the third criminal from Home Alone 3. That's how I know him.
Is he really? I didn't know he was in that.
Yeah, he's
The only other thing, and this is Lenny Von Dolan, who plays Miles. The only other thing I've seen him in is Twin Peaks, where he plays a shut-in who, like, he's agoraphobic and can't leave his house.
And he has a computer?
Cool. No. he's obsessed with, in the TV show, the murder victim Laura Palmer, and then he's in the prequel movie as well in a small, really small scene. And I didn't realize, because that's the first thing I saw him in when I watched Twin Peaks like years ago, and he's really good in it because he comes across as very kind of simpering and weak, but also sort of sinister. Like, under the surface, there's clearly something wrong with him.
Shame he didn't bring those abilities over into this film.
Well, what I was going to say is, he comes across very similarly in this, and yet he's supposed to be a sympathetic character, but he's just a fucking dick in this film.
Yeah, he's an absolute creep.
Yeah, he's horrible. Like, he's weird, and like he acts. He's got this kind of rapey vibe to him.
I know it is one of his first films, but his delivery in this is just awful, isn't it?
If anything, he should have been the one playing the inanimate object, not Bud Cort. Like that, like Bud Cort, who is from Harold and Maude, and I think he's God in Dogma. you know.
Wait, Alanis Morissette is God in Dogma.
No, I remember she gets stuck inside that guy who's in a coma.
Like at the ski ball.
Oh,
he's the other guy. Okay. But like he's quite an interesting guy. I think he does an all right performance as a stupid computer AI thing. But you know, it's like why is the man who is alive and can move around more inanimate than a computer that has a, you know, graphic-y face? And
so it's not that he's inanimate; it's that he's like he's whiny. He reminds me of a much worse version of David Schwimmer in Friends.
I think he delivers all his lines like he's just remembering them. It's literally an exercise of memory rather than acting.
But his voice is so, like, grotesquely soft, and, like, whenever, like, I watched it with headphones on, and I was like, oh, God, this is, it's like someone trying to talk me into phone sex. It's horrible.
Well, before we keep ripping into the film, just to... You're right.
Oh, this might be the best thing you've ever said.
Okay. but anyway, I thought we'd give some context. We don't need the usual what did we all think of it shtick, because we've watched it once now and once before, and we probably don't even remember when we saw it the first time. But I guess we should all say a little bit like where we're coming from with this, because I thought it would be cheesy and 80s, but I didn't realise how utterly shit it would be. I thought it might be a bit corny, but I was prepared for a kind of schmaltzy 80s rubbish. I was thinking, it's a little bit like Weird Science. I was kind of expecting that kind of tone. Well, Anthony, what were you expect? Why did you initially... Maybe you could say why you picked it originally, I don't know, but what were your feelings going into this?
I remember, like, being over a friend's house and, like, going through, like, their kind of DVD collection. And then I found this, Electric Dreams, and it was, like a purpley-pinky DVD, and it kind of said it's called Electric Dreams, and then you obviously make the connection then to the song, like Electric Dreams, and then you know it had quite a good soundtrack, or it had like Jeff Lynne and Heaven 17 and Culture Club, and it was just kind of just one of these curiosities. It's just I have to watch this. I kind of feel like this happens a lot in my life. Because I think I've given the same speech as Xanadu. It's like, oh, look, pretty thing with odd things, must watch.
Oh, look at all from these 80s colours.
Yeah. And, yeah, I watched it. And the first time I watched it was... It was fine. I was kind of... it was just so 80s. And I kind of enjoyed the soundtrack. And it was mental, but in a kind of fun way.
It is enjoyably bad as well. Like, it's kind of fun, like a kind of, because it's so weird and dated, it's fun.
And that's why I kind of originally kind of put it up for discussion. But since then, I've kind of watched it about 3 or 4 times, and each time it kind of gets a little bit worse and worse. Because I remember being a bit more on this film side the first time we recorded it, because I think it's because it's a film that's kind of based around music a lot. It's supposed to kind of appeal to your emotions more than your intellect.
Certainly.
So things like hate, disgust.
Well, you're supposed to kind of go, I think what it tries to do is provide a kind of like emotional flow with the music rather than worrying too much about the writing or the acting or anything like that.
It does feel like almost a feature length music video.
It is. Oh, totally. It essentially this is, isn't it?
This is totally a product of the MTV age that was starting.
Yeah. It's basically watching 80s Night on VH1, but they put a bullshit romantic plot in the advert breaks instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but since then, I watched it not so long ago, like I'm sure all of you did, and it was a bit of a chore this time. But that doesn't mean any of the weird shit that is in this has gone away, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about.
True. Abby, your thoughts?
I don't really remember my expectations from the first time. I would speculate that they were mild intrigue, because like Anthony said, on paper, this sounds very intriguing. But it's not.
But are you a fan of like weird science? Because I know that's from your DVD collection. What is the... Like, did this not feel like, yeah, camp, like, stupid 80s shit, I love it, you know? I mean, you also like Earth Girls Are Easy, so these are in the same sort of bizarre categories, I'd say.
Yeah, but there's no fun to this.
Well, it tries, doesn't it? There's it's got that whole mannequin, let's have a music montage instead of plot to it.
But it doesn't succeed in any fun.
Sure.
It's, yeah, we like comparing it to Weird Science, and then Weird Science has a charisma to it. Like the film itself is sort of silly and fun, whereas this, I can't figure out if because it lurches from playing it for drama, and
yeah, and then being
really really light, it's really all over the place.
And I think it's infuriating because it squanders so much potential, both in understanding sci-fi concepts and the like. The main thing is, and this just to launch us straight into it now, the plot of the film is about a feckless idiot man who happens to be an architect, and he decides to buy a computer instead of a watch, which is what he's actually after. Because he's running late all the time. So this bloke, Moles, or Miles, whatever you want to call him, he buys a computer after listening to an idiot in a shop and sets it up, and he has loads of extra add-ons and bonus shit that he shouldn't be buying, and he sets it up to control essentially his whole house. And then, through reasons that don't make a lot of sense, he basically accidentally spills champagne on it. Or no, this is it.
No, he pours. He like I think like is it on? Is that smoking or on fire or something?
Yeah, it overheats or something. So he pours liquid on it because that's what you should do with an electrical fire.
What he's doing is he sets his computer up, but he talks to it and it sort of explains stuff to him like a moron, whatever. He got this computer. He sets it up and he decides to download all of his boss's work files over the internet or something, even though it's the 80s. Like, he downloads everything. Just download unlimited everything.
Unlimited memory, yeah.
Somehow, he pours all this information into his own computer for some reason, and then spills champagne on it, like a cunt. And it becomes alive. He essentially creates artificial intelligence.
It's such a 80s yuppie way of creating life. Like, I suppose they couldn't have been like, they couldn't have sprinkled it with cocaine, but like, I suppose the next one down is just champagne.
The fact that he creates life, this is one of the first and major continuing problems with this film. He accidentally creates an artificial intelligence in the 80s, and he doesn't fucking care. Yeah. He doesn't tell anyone. He doesn't go, oh my god, this is amazing, this thing is conscious, it's aware, it's talking to me, it's aware of itself.
He basically just whines like a bitch that it can't do his chores for him properly.
Yeah. And then uses it, like manipulates it into manipulating a woman to like him.
I mean, the word of the day is squanders. He squanders this gift. Like, if it had been a computer genius who came up with if he'd have deserved to invent it, there might be something interesting in squandering the power. But because he's just gifted this artificial intelligence that controls his life and is amazing, it's just this fantastic computer that he can talk to and it can do things, and there's endless potential. And he doesn't even, like, you know, rig the stock market or do something crap in the 80s to make a bit of money. He literally, all he could think to do with it is, I guess it can write me some songs to seduce my neighbour, because I can't be arsed.
Computer, write me a song. Okay, I did. Oh, shit. Okay, I wrote you another one. Thanks, dickhead. And then
that's his attitude.
Like,
the whole time.
He doesn't even... And this is, like, you know, spoilers, he gets with the woman at the end. But then when you actually take the whole film into consideration and the way he treats the computer that's doing him all these favors and asking him really, like, heartfelt, heartbreaking questions of, you know, its own existence, and he's just like, shut up. Like, you know, he gets with Virginia Madsen at the end. That relationship is doomed. Because he's going to treat her like shit, clearly.
Oh, he knows a good time. He knows how to date. He takes her to Alcatraz on their first date, as you do. Go to the Alcatraz, win a fluffy penguin at the fair. Classic first date.
Go to Alcatraz and play around in the cells somehow. Yeah. I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Well, you know, they're rebels, aren't they? They're just carefree lovers dicking around in the cells of Alcatraz. Not morbid and irresponsible or anything. Oh, it's a bit, but yeah. So this prick Moles who invents a just turns his regular. I mean, his computer's already amazing because it can do stuff that they couldn't do in the 80s. We're starting to do some of the stuff now. Like, it's got touchscreen. It can control like the TV and all lots of the appliances from the house. But then, you know, it's got every bloody feature you could possibly want, and it gains sentience as well as can make him breakfast, control the microwave, lock the door.
Lock the door that is, as far as I can tell, just a typical, like, analog, you know, lock with a key. How the fuck is it doing that?
You had to do a lot of engineering to set that up.
Mm. Like, most of it kind of made sense, but there was two things that bothered me. One of them was the blender. Like, what could it possibly do with the blender? Mm. Second one, and this one really disturbed me, the electric toothbrush.
Yes. So annoying. Like, and also, like,
maybe the blender. Like, you can put stuff in the night and then they can make you a smoothie in the morning. But the electric toothbrush, there's nothing.
You have a switch on it where your thumb is. Like, how lazy are you? You can't flick a switch near your thumb to make it come on.
It's also, there's a battery in it. There was no wireless technology at this point. And this is something I usually criticize you for, Rich, about trying to, like, force logic into something that clearly doesn't have any. But there's a difference between not being realistic in a, you know, but still making sense, and just throwing fucking whatever in there, which is what this film does.
Throwing bullshit at the fan and seeing what sticks.
It's properly like, ah, fuck it. Yeah, the computer can do it. Fine, why not? And there's no setup to, like, how could he? This computer would cost him fucking millions in the 80s. There's no, like, it just, and it doesn't set any of this stuff up, and it doesn't do anything with it afterwards. It's the same as the artificial intelligence thing. It's like, oh, your computer's alive, and Miles just goes, well, I don't care. Like,
I think that's one of the problems in the whole movie for me, though, is people do not react to things. It's not just this. It's everything that happens. People do not react in the sensible, normal way that they should be.
To anything ever.
It really bothered me all the way through. Like, it's a kind of, it's a common thing in kind of 80s comedy, like romantic comedies. And usually it's fine. But here, it was just, no one reacted how they should. Ugh. And, like, this was, like, one of the big ones, admittedly, was, you know, you've got this critical computer, and it's just squandered, and essentially drives it to suicide by the end.
Yeah, he's horrible. If it was a person, he would be the worst. Like, if it was, like, a nephew who was staying with him, or, like, whatever the character is, if it's just a person, he's obnoxious and using it. And, like, okay, it's a computer, so it's a tool, but when it gains life, I think you've got to reapproach your ethics a little,
reevaluate what's going on here.
What I thought was extra weird about the whole toothbrush thing is that's when the computer decides to try and get Miles back a bit, he decides to make his toothbrush speed up a bit. Oh, that's really going to endanger his gum line. All the things in the house. I mean, also, it can make groceries explode. I don't even know how that's connected up to cables. I don't know. I mean, Abby, do you want to weigh in? We've all been talking and you've been sitting there.
Oh, I've been gently nodding and agreeing with everything you've said. In fact, it's given me some kind of serene glow listening to you precisely dissect this movie for its shits.
You're just in agreement. That's okay.
We've been ragging on him.
Oh yeah, she's a ditzy.
Deservedly so. But they've somehow managed to create a character that doesn't even have one note.
Of all the notes that are played synthetically in this.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were saying the girlfriend woman is shit as well.
Yeah, she doesn't even have a character trait that is an emotion. She just has a job.
She plays the cello.
When I was kind of writing the sum up for this, I couldn't find a way to describe her, and the only kind of personality trait I could find is that she plays the cello.
Yeah,
and that's it.
She's also blind to all of Miles's obvious flaws. Like, he's a jerk and suspicious a lot. So he's trying to because he's invented a computer that he's getting to do all his grunt work for and his creative endeavors. One of the things he's supposed to be working on is like a jigsaw puzzle brick thing that's tangentially linked to his job.
Yeah, because don't forget, he's a fucking architect.
Yeah, like, and so the computer's legitimately working on that, but he's also getting it to compose songs from scratch, even though it's only just learned how to speak. Like, it's like Johnny Five kind of computer, and it's like learning things from the TV like Johnny Five
so
does.
So he's putting it to fucking work.
Yeah, it's just, to him, it's just, you know... Well, it's a if it was just a computer, no problem, is there? But, you know, he's also trying to keep it a secret for some reason. There's no reason to, because because part of the problem is the computer has been making music, and that has been heard by the neighbour woman. And the weirdest thing is the computer starts generating music and composing, and it starts a jam session with this cello playing woman next door because it can hear the computer doing it through the vents. And so she's jamming away with it, and they're making this weird, like, music together. And that's kind of why she starts to like Miles, is because he's secretly composing. And he wants to not say that he's got a computer that can do that. And so he doesn't understand why she thinks he's good at music, and, you know, that's okay as a starter. But why can't he just say, yeah, this is my computer that I make the music on? I mean, it obviously sounds like that.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't show her an instrument as an alternative. So he's like, covers it up with sheets, and he's always trying to hide the fact he's got a computer. And it's like, just say you've got a computer, you twat. How will that be a problem?
What are you hiding?
Yeah.
Like... If I was in her position and he was acting like that, and plus with the way his general demeanor, I would think he's got fucking bodies in there.
There's nothing he does.
I want nothing to do with him.
There's nothing he does that makes her fall in love with him. Like, there's nothing about him personally. Yeah, she's full steam ahead. I think one of the things that supports Anthony's opinion that nobody makes any logical decisions or. No one responds to anything correctly. When she first comes in the guy's apartment, because there's like a dog barking or something, and Miles starts to deny the fact that there's a voice or like the computer's talking or that there's a dog, and she questions him, and he just makes a lot of rubbish up, and then she infers that there's piss on the floor, and that's not from the dog either. He denies the fact that there's a dog, even though there's piss on the floor or something. And it's like, wait. If he's denying there's a dog and there's pee on the floor, do you think that's his pee if he denies it?
Yeah.
Like, she just accepts that he's got all these strange answers and doesn't question what she's finding out about him.
That's the one thing I assumed where he was, like, they were in a building that wouldn't allow pets, was my assumption. And that he was saying he didn't have a dog, but he did.
Yeah.
But that is just the only thing in this film where I could actually legitimately rationalise something.
No, but his neighbour had a dog, so they're allowed dogs in there. It's not about the whole... Like, and the computer mimics the dog's bark, and it sort of... It's like there's barking in the apartment, so he can't explain it, and yet she doesn't care. Like, she doesn't care that anything he says to explain stuff makes no sense, and that he's clearly trying to hide a computer, and... Just the fact that he doesn't remember composing any music. She's never thrown by any of this. She's just, I love you. And then when she does start to find out that he doesn't really compose the music, she just says what she loves about him is just all this personality shit. And you kind of go, Wait, when did he...
He hasn't got one.
Really?
He didn't do anything. He's been the weirdest guy ever. And...
Actually, yeah, so it's not that he hasn't got a personality. He has one. It's just really unpleasant.
Liar, manipulator,
yeah.
Asshole.
Abusive.
Yeah. I mean...
Because let's not forget one of the key scenes in the film when he's in bed trying to go to sleep and he's had this conversation with the computer, which is also called Edgar at the very end of the film.
Yeah, and it's another point as to why he's a prick, because you never ask my name, and it's like, yeah, well, if you find out that a computer is apparently alive, you might question it to think, is this real, or is it just really clever technology? But you might ask it what you'd call it, not instantly enslave it to your whims.
Yeah, yeah, because he didn't even refer to it as anything. It's just you fucking plasticky piece of shit. Write me a song.
And then why has it even got that name?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, my name's Edgar. Why does it stand for something? Where did you get it from? But no, there's a conversation where they're in bed and.
What, him and the computer?
Yeah. He's in bed, and the computer's like... it says... And the computer as well, as much as it's kind of the sympathetic character, is also fucking creepy and weird.
Well, it's like a petulant child that doesn't understand everything.
And he's like, I don't want to touch her.
Yeah.
I don't want to kiss her. And then Miles just fucking laughs at him and says, what? Anyway, good night. It's like, fucking, no wonder it's rebelling against you, you fucking prick.
But it puts up with a lot of his shit. I mean, it does attack him off and on, and somehow it, like, changes the light bulbs in the house to make them red to be scary. I don't know how it does that. Yeah. I mean, once he's hooked it up, it can operate things. And you know.
I thought of one other good thing about this film.
Wow, go on.
It's the set design was actually quite good, because there's... I definitely noticed it towards the end, but I'm not sure if it was at the start as well, where they had lights that looked like eyes, and they lit up and dimmed when he was speaking, so that he had a sort of physical presence.
Well, is it Steve Barron, the director?
Yes.
There are little moments where, I mean, he's a music video director, or primarily, that's most of his catalogue.
Yeah, I think this was his first film.
There are moments in there of some of like the artistry that you would expect from a music video director who is used to kind of telling a visual story, and there are ideas in the film that aren't terrible. Like you're talking about the jam session with Virginia Madsen and the computer. And that was one of the... I remember the first time I watched this, when I wasn't expecting all the shit that comes afterwards. I still think as well, after sitting through it again, that's quite good, because it's very early on in Edgar's like awakening, and it makes sense that his becoming conscious comes through the music that he's making with her, because it is a nice way of showing the connection between the two of them. And why it explains why he falls in love with her, because she's kind of like given him life through that music.
I mean, at this stage, there is potential for something interesting to happen.
Yeah, there are moments like that where it's quite nice that's how he comes to, is through that music. Yeah.
I mean, they also there's also a lot of graphic effects used, some effectively and others, you know, there's a lot of kind of screen savory type images that come up, because they don't really have a face for Edgar. They kind of put up like a smiley face every now and again, but mostly he seems to visualize himself or his language through a kind of screen saver, or like that pipe thing that Windows 98 had, or like various 80s graphics.
I like, and again, it's probably because of being a music video director for most of his directorial career, The good stuff in this film is mostly outside of the performances and the actual character stuff, and it's more of the there's a collection of themes that he's obviously got in the back of his mind that he never quite got to use, but the way visually Edgar is expressed in the little ticks that the household objects that he controls have at certain times, or what's appearing on the screen. That stuff is cool. I wish there was more of it in this, and less of Miles going, and like, oh, fuck.
You're right, there's definitely a creative element, and I think you were right to spot it, Abby. Is like, there is a flair for visual storytelling, but the story they told is abhorrent.
Yeah, I think Steve Barron is clearly kind of pulling out all the stops to try and make every shot as kind of dynamic as he can. Like, going back to the kind of dueling, like, thing.
Dueling cello scene.
Yeah, it's kind of what is basically two static things, just a computer and someone playing a cello. And he's pulling out all the stops to make that scene as dynamic and fast paced, and he's like moving the camera around as much as he can. And this keeps happening, but it does just feel like you're watching MTV for an hour and a half.
It doesn't tie the scenes of Miles and Edgar being fucking insufferable at each other, and also. But you're right about that. Like, I would say that the scene with Virginia Madsen and Edgar playing music together, like through the wall, is probably the best scene of the film. And that's unfortunate because it's very near the beginning and there's a lot of shit to get through.
Well, another song composing part. Miles has to, you know, he wants a song to seduce her. And so he's on the way out of the house, because, you know, fuck it, I got to go to work. I don't have to invest the rest of my life exploiting this machine. I can hardly be asked. But on the way out, sort us out a song. What is love? And the computer's just like, what is love? I don't fully comprehend and understand human emotions and English. Even though I can speak in English, I don't understand keywords that I definitely could have learned from TV. Explain to me things, and he's like, oh, for fuck's sake, why do I have to explain to you? And he sets the computer up, and he's like, yeah, just sing it about love and crying on pillows, and like, just, this is a general idea for a song.
That says a lot about Miles, right there, that little line about crying on the pillow. Yeah, that's what love is to you, isn't it, Miles?
Tears on a pillow.
But, it is quite funny, the song that the computer writes, and that it works in the line, something like, show me your tits.
Yeah, it has kind of crass rhymes, and it's quite a good song, like, pop-wise, it's kind of a quirky little song that it somehow took adverts that were probably product placement from the TV and reverses their music. He kind of comes up with a creative little ditty, and then has a kind of childish rhyme scheme about love, and then, says stuff like tits and... I don't know, he says screw at some point. I don't think that's in the song, but... And that's part... And then Miles is just, like, not blown away that a computer has done this in the time he's been scratching his ass in work. He's like, this is shit! Why don't you get it instantly? Like, it's not like you were born yesterday.
I know. He's so fucking mean to this computer. He's like, this is retarded, you're gay. Like, it's not... And it's so, like...
God, do I have to make you do everything myself?
Yeah! You're a computer. You're supposed to be able to do everything without any input from me at all. Like,
it's not the genre I wanted. God, I know I didn't set anything up other than tell you to do it, but he's such an ass.
Why is he still going to work?
He's got a computer that can discuss world politics with him and science and the universe and can do anything.
On Earth... to have created artificial intelligence, self-aware artificial intelligence, by accident, and instead of sitting there teaching it what love is and trying to genuinely explain it, he's just like, I don't know, some bitch is crying or something. I got to go to work and do fuck all day and then come back and kick you in the bin.
It's,
like,
it's not even that he squanders it. It's that even if he was totally selfish, look, I don't want to rule the world and have loads of money and figure out how to, like, I don't want to teach you anything. You're just, I want to exploit you for my own means. Even then, he doesn't care. He's not even interested in this amazing thing that's happened. He's more ashamed of it than anything.
Yeah, this thing could get you anything you wanted. You would make a fucking fortune.
Or you can make a friend, but fuck making friends with the thing.
Yeah. It clearly needs you. And I get that, like, to an extent, that is what, like, that's obviously deliberate in the film, which blows my mind even more, because it's not done in a subtle kind of tension sort of way, where it starts out with him being amazed, and then he starts getting frustrated. He's instantly frustrated with it. There's
it's like made me orange juice, and I'm pissed off because it drove it to me on a cart, and that maybe I stood in it or something. You're shit because you've made me orange juice somehow. And it's like unbelievable.
You know what it is, like.
But you know, let's get getting away from this problem because we could rant on it for the whole podcast. Another aspect I think is worth talking about is how crap Miles is at, like, he gets this relationship going through lies and deceit and creating his computer to make songs. And then, like, the scene in the cinema where they go to, like, a movie later on, and he's so unbelievably filmically crap.
Oh my god.
He, like, spills his popcorn and drink on her. And at one point, my favourite part is, like, they're establishing he's a bit clumsy, but he just slaps her in the face for no reason. Yes! Just backhands her, and without an excuse. And somehow she still stays in love with him.
Yeah, just this weird... Yeah, it's just a weird slapstick scene where we haven't really had any slapstick in the film. Yeah. And then she kind of... He kind of just, like, assaults her and abuses her, and yet she's still totally up for, like, snogging him in the car.
Yeah, and he lies all the time to her.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. What's that relationship like once the film ends?
I don't know.
Because I guarantee that he is secretly one of those guys who will beat the shit out of his partner.
Well, what should have happened is Miles should have been thwarted by Edgar, who's the hero, and he should have somehow had a relationship with this woman. He should have built himself a robot body or something.
I would have been a lot... turning it into fucking Demon Seed now. That's getting a bit weird.
He just needs to plug in a vibrator. She's away. Control that.
Well, he's clearly much more emotionally generous than Miles fucking is.
I mean, yeah, of course.
If the film ended with, like, a murder-suicide with Edgar killing himself in order to electrocute and kill Miles, and then she just, like, walks in on it and sees, like, this exploded computer and Miles' corpse... Thumbs up for me. I would have been more than happy with that.
I mean, this whole thing could so easily have been a fantastic sci-fi thriller horror film. Because it does get there. There's a Hal vibe to him after a while. After he's been tormented by Miles. Basically, denying the girlfriend that the computer is seduced. Because he's just curious. I mean, it's a bit weird that he wants to touch her. But essentially, he should at least meet the woman he's managed to jam with and seduce. And Miles is like, no. This human shit is for me. I'm going to keep you a secret. And it's like, you know... Correctly, the computer Edgar tries to turn on him a bit, and he becomes a bit like Hal, and it's like Space Odyssey, and it's kind of effective. And I'd prefer it to have been a really sinister movie like that.
Well, there's two films here, and neither of them ever starts. Like, it's the beginning of two films until it just stops, because there's one that is a potentially fun, quirky, but genuinely quite touching. Like 80s romantic comedy where the way it ends is the possibly tragic ending of that comedy with the reveal at the end that he's the fucking lawnmower man now or something and all the phones ringing and Pierce Brosnan's like, oh bollocks, but there's that potential film that never really happens because it tries to be that quirky comedy but with this fucking twat in the lead role who you can't possibly like, but at the same time it has the potential to be that sinister kind of thriller where the computer becomes like angry and bitter and
sick
it tries to do them and it tries to do them both at certain parts of the film, and there are times when it even does one or the other well, but it never commits to either one. The bit that and again, when I first watched it I thought that was what was going to happen, was when he does something, like he touches the keyboard or something, and Edgar screams.
Was it like that? That's great.
A dog made a weird noise.
I see. That was. Was it a dog, Anthony, or was it a computer making a noise? Have you really got a dog?
Oh, you're right. I don't have a dog. It's the neighbours.
That explains the piss on the floor.
No, it's mine.
He like, and it's really like it's a jump scare. It's a
don't
really
touch me.
Yeah, and then he's like, and then later on he says it again, but in a really sinister, "Don't ever touch me again."
You'll never touch me. Yeah,
and that's when I was like, because at that point, you know, Edgar, Miles has been so unlikable. I'm like, oh shit, it's just gonna get real now. Stuff's gonna get sick. Yeah. No, it fucking doesn't.
Well, he locks him in, and he does scare him a bit because he can somehow heat up the doorknob somehow.
Yeah,
with his powers of electricity,
right there, fucking ruins it because this computer has fucking magic powers rather
can
than
can make things
technology.
Explode.
It immediately squanders. Any potential of being sinister. And again, there's the other bit later on when Edgar goes mental and Miles goes mental as well and like smashes him up, pushes the monitor off the desk and everything. And then Virginia Madsen goes in and like looks around and Edgar wakes up with her in there and she like she touches like the inside of the computer. And in a better film, that would be a really effective callback to Edgar lamenting the fact that he can't touch her with anything.
Also, he can't feel that. Just because he's intelligent doesn't mean he can feel the plastic of his own body.
But that's what I mean. Like, there's in a better film that does more with the story it has, there's a kind of sadness there to the fact that she is literally touching the inside of him and he can't feel it, and then he wakes up.
Can he even see? He has a microphone to hear with or whatever, but he doesn't have a webcam or something, does he?
I mean, I don't know because there's no rules, so it could be
exactly.
Like it's either that he can't feel that, and there's a sadness to it, which again is the effective, you know, light but still sort of intelligent romantic comedy, or there's this film with its magic sci-fi where her touching the circuits is basically her stimulating his prostate. I don't know. Because the film never leaves anything else.
Yeah. Abby, you're quiet there. Can I wake you up for some thoughts? Got any ruminations?
As soon as Jimmy said prostate, my whole brain just sort of caved in on itself.
Well, can I set you up to maybe explain a scene then, and that can get us talking further? I'd like you to elaborate on the beeper scene in the recital.
That is probably the absolute peak of Miles being an unfathomable twat.
Yeah. I said that like the best bit of the film is the cello, the invisible cello jam. That's probably. It's hard to pick a worst moment, but that scene where he's at the recital and the beeper's playing music is probably up there.
Yeah, it's basically been possessed by Edgar, and he's trying to play along with what's the name? And he doesn't leave straight away. He tries to stay, even though it keeps going and going and going, and it's like, no. If that thing is going, take the battery out if you can. If you can't take the battery out, you get the fuck out of that room.
It's just the way he reacts is so fucking wet and like, oh, and just fucking lying down on the floor shaking, like, I'm too socially awkward, I can't cope. And like, fuck's sake, for already socially awkward British nerds talking about films to be telling someone fucking wiser says a lot about that character.
How hard is it to stand up, apologise for your beeper sounding like a polyphonic orgasm, and like get the fuck out and chuck it down? Like he tries to get rid of it, but not straight. Like he flushes it in the loo eventually, because you know that's how you solve problems. You flush them away in the toilet. But like he's like, it doesn't make any sense that Edgar is. I don't know. He's listening to the recital on the radio. And then he's broadcasting like polyphonic music to the beeper somehow.
Yeah, then this scene just does not make any sense.
And she's like smiling, playing the cello. Yeah. Fuck off! How does she know it's him? I mean,
how does
I know
this guy not get
thing
ushered out of there.
But, yeah, Like, surely, I know, like, she's all like, oh, he's playing along with me again. But you're in the middle of a fucking gig. And he's not adorably playing along with you. He's fucking ruining it.
Yeah.
People are going to be
no one
angry.
Else knows. No one else in the orchestra knows what the hell's going on with that noise.
Yeah.
And it seems as if people aren't even sure that it's joining in. It's just a horrible noise to them.
Yeah.
Oh, such a fucking stupid scene.
This scene is also the start of the mass amount of grumpy old women that are just inhabiting the city.
Yeah, that's true.
Just old grumpy women constantly attacking Miles for some reason or other.
Oh, more power to them, though.
when the computer has a strop like a teenager and like plays music loud and projects colours and stuff and annoys the neighbours, that happens as well. And that was kind of effective as a visual, like the idea of the house shouting and making music play.
Yeah.
But yeah, just Seattle's full of grumpy old ladies apparently. And feckless computer. Not even a computer nerd. That's the trouble. If he was, he might have got somewhere. Oh.
There's also, the recital scene reminds me of a character who I cannot remember what the fuck his name is, but the other member of the orchestra.
The boyfriend potential material that's...
Yeah, this is the thing, though. It sets it up as if he's going to be, like, a challenger.
Yeah, like he's actual nice guy.
And then, not really.
No.
Like, also douche.
He's a bit of a dick, but it never establishes how much or why. And then her cello gets crushed in the lift, and she's like carrying it like a wounded. And again, in a better film, that would have been really sad, because you know she's had it since she was a kid. But all these people in the orchestra are like, "Oh, it's just a bit of wood." No, because they're probably as attached to their instruments as she is.
Ah, but I don't think it's that. Like, that's sort of the reason why he's not the right guy for her. Is he's like, "Oh, whatevs." You know, that's a shame. But it's like, well, yeah, that's actually okay. I mean, I know people are attached to their instruments, but, I mean, she's being a wet blanket. And I think this is when Miles comes into his own in terms of the
actually,
plot.
Sorry, no, Miles is the one who says it's only a bit of wood.
Oh, no, but they both are kind of dismissive initially, and she gets all bent out of shape because she tries to phone him and cry on the phone and, like...
On the phone to Edgar, who's like, you were there, weren't you? I said, what the fuck is going on here? Because, like, you're trying to set it up that he's, like, his jealous wife, and because then there's a joke of women, her. But none of that's been established. Ugh. So it's just surreal, weird shit happening.
But he has a kind of weird speech that is so ironic. Like, it's kind of partly meant to be ironic, I think, but it's extra ironic because the film misses the point of an object coming to life. But he gives a whole speech to her about, like, her cello breaking and how the music... her experiences haven't gone. Like, the cello maybe broke, but all the things you loved about it, they're not gone. All the memories you have are still there. Your talents and abilities are still there. The cello doesn't matter. It's you and all of that shit that counts. And you kind of go, well, there's some parallels to how you're treating your sentient computer here, Miles. I mean, you're saying the object doesn't matter, and you're... I mean, it's just kind of horribly... It could easily fit in with the message of the film, but they haven't done that.
That's Miles saying, do you know what? Two more drafts of this, and it would have been pretty good.
It almost could have been poetically fitting, but otherwise it was just a kind of out-of-character moment where Miles is sort of nice, despite spending most of his time lying and slapping it.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any other key scenes that lead up to the end that we've missed out? I feel like there must be some other bit.
Yeah, there's like a few like of the musical montages.
Oh my god, that's
what most of this bloody film is.
We get an actual electric dream from the computer. It's really bizarre. Odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's killing the fucking running time.
That's true.
And I'm sure, like, back in the 80s, this might have been kind of visually spectacular to watch for the first time, but I think it's a kind of just inherent flaw with films that kind of deal with technology, especially ones from the 80s, because it just will automatically means it will become outdated at some point.
Yeah,
and
I mean...
the film will just look like rubbish.
It's just trying to show off all of the computer 3D animation it can do, and it's just why bother? And it's also so, you know, it feels like a mini music video about that's like a dream sequence from Edgar's perspective, and it's got mannequin shapes and colours, and some of it relates to architecture and some of the themes of the film, but it's mostly just obtuse weirdness.
But again, though, like the imagination that went into that short and the creativity that goes into that musical interlude, put it in the fucking film.
Or just make a music video separately.
Yeah, and fuck it. Yeah, all of those ideas, put them in the film themselves. You don't need to have a separate music video in the middle of the fucking thing to explain the subtext that you could be layering into the actual story.
Abby, do you have any bits you think we needed to talk about before we talk about how it concludes in a ridiculous manner?
I don't know. I think we've covered a lot of the different ways in which he is a twat.
The trouble is, we're all so savvy, we're not leaving you anything to say once we do. We're like, blah, this problem, and you're just like... So I feel like you're not getting your fair shake of the conversation. I just want to give you an opportunity to bring up any aspect that you think we've missed out.
You've all done really well. Congratulations, my boys. you have covered most expertly the nuances of crap.
Thank you.
How about this then? Is there anything redeemable that you guys can...
I was going to say, we should probably try and think of something.
Because, like, the music is good. Admittedly, the kind of the way it's dealt with, some of the montages are really dull, which kind of makes the music also dull. But the music is technically good from some, like, good artists. So I think that's, like, one thing. I think there is a kind of 80s kind of fun kind of run through it somewhat.
The first time I watched it, I had fun because I didn't know what was like. Everything is kind of ridiculous, and you're completely bewildered by every decision, every reaction, all the bits of technology that make no sense but also predict the future weirdly. Like certain things are kind of ahead of their time in predictions, and it would almost be a good comment about how we are these days, like the way we're everything. We have to have everything done for us by computer. So it's cutting edge.
It's potentially ripe for a remake, especially now you've a lot of directors who, I mean, he obviously wouldn't be the right director for this, but someone like Nicholas Refn, or however you pronounce it, you know, he did Bronson, he did Only God Forgives.
It would be an amazing horror film.
Recently he did Neon Demon. Actually, yeah, now I think about it, he might be good for it. But like a lot of directors are now... of an age where their stuff is calling back to that kind of like neon bold color 80s stuff. And it would be good to like do a sort of either tongue in cheek or really sinister revisit of this plot.
Definitely.
But Anthony, in talking about the music and complimenting it, you have reminded me of another major criticism I have totally forgotten, which is the sound design outside of the music. This is one of those films that has some of the worst, like, ADR post-production, like, dubbing I've seen, and it infuriates me, because there are moments where, like, Miles in particular is, like, making weird little jokes and stuff, but they're, like, a couple of seconds behind when things should be happening, and they don't, like... the sound of his voice isn't right, the tone of what he's saying isn't right, so it's, like, dialogue from another film just being, like, pasted over certain moments. And it's one of the things that shit films, particularly in the 80s, like this, did a lot. And it oversteps a line of films from the 80s by someone like Steven Spielberg, or earlier films by Robert Altman, where they would have a lot of characters talking over each other, but it sounded like it was in the film. Whereas this... it's like you're accidentally overhearing the actors in the editing room.
Yeah,
or like
it's
rehearsing
clunky.
Their lines in a booth. Like, and
well, I don't think anyone rehearsed their lines. Memorized and said. Then
right, just... reading them off. That's it. It was as if some of the dialogue was done in like ADR, but instead of like going into the booth and performing, they just had the script in front of them. And again, Miles in particular, which is disappointing because I wanted to like him because the guy is good in Twin Peaks. I assumed he was good. Is just reading his lines off a piece of paper into a microphone.
I don't blame him. I mean, if you'd be glad to get the work, but disappointed in how stupid the film is. So, I don't.
Was that a Richard Burton quote I put earlier on our social media?
I don't know. Go on.
Here it is. If you're going to make rubbish, be the best rubbish in it.
Yeah. Fair play. When he was in, what was it, Candy?
He was the best bit of that.
Nightmare of a film.
Yeah, it's the sort of script where if you get it and you're like, you land the main role and you're like, this is the worst schlocky shit ever, that's when you camp it up to it. Like, this is when you make it the most fun, ridiculous, not do a terrible job.
Yeah, he's exactly right. If you're going to be in something that you know is shit for the paycheck, you may as well just go for it.
I mean, they do have, there are, the okay, I'm trying to bring it round to a compliment like Anthony wanted. I like a lot of what they do to show the computer and the way it thinks. Like, it's a bit stupid that it learns to speak slowly and like it sounds like a foreign person learning English. There's a lot of stupid ideas, but a lot of its conversations it has with Miles when he can be asked to put up with him are kind of interesting. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of philosophical discussions they could have, and I like how it's visually shown, and I like the turning on him, because he should. So there's a lot of the key story that works. It's just stay away from the really terrible rom-com aspect. I mean, you can have him manipulate it. You know, the computer being responsible for a human relationship is interesting, but they're just so shit together.
The whole conceit of the computer working to set them up while being in love with the woman and like being manipulated by Miles. Like, yeah, like you said, there is a ton of potential, and there are little moments where the film almost has it. It's like reaching through something to, and it, like, you know, when you drop something under the sofa and you're like reaching to try and grab it, and you don't want to have to pull the couch out to just pick it up. So you get on the floor and you're like, and your fingertips are touching it, but you can't. And every time you touch it, it slides slightly further away.
Yeah. You're like, that's how this film is with the idea of AI. It, like, you've got the classic thing. You've got a computer thinking like a human, which is not correct, and it can't feel and think like humans, yet it's struggling because it's got the mind of a human, but it's like trapped in an inanimate object. It's reaching to understand the world, and yet it has moles. Being a dick and ignoring him and being all petulant, and they both become children together instead of
the AI aspect of it is, I think, fairly well thought through and established, but everything else is just kind of slapped on there.
Super illogical. There's lots of practical. The film is clearly made by people who don't understand computers and don't care. They just they have ideas in their head that'll be cool to do. They don't mind it doesn't make any sense.
I'd be amazed if none of us have any comments about the actual ending when Edgar manages to disappear into the Matrix.
Well, yeah, let's talk about it. We're on the last bit, and then we can come up with our metaphors. Essentially what happens is Miles turns on him, and he's about to smash him up with an axe, and I can't quite remember how he's kind of talked out of it. How does the sympathy come where he doesn't decide to axe this computer in the face for doing everything for him and being great? How does it turn around? He just sort of...
What I do remember, though, is thinking, of course Miles has a fucking axe in his house.
Mm. I'm surprised he hasn't hooked it up to the computer so it chops it for him.
It's the fact that this creepy guy owns an axe is another red flag. Yeah. He owns an axe. He's weird. He owns an axe. He pisses on the floor in his own apartment.
And he denies having musical abilities while clearly showing signs of it. He's a freak. But, like, you know, basically, Edgar is the bigger man, even though he's not a man, and decides he just sort of is sympathetic enough to Miles to, like, take his own life. He's come up with like an elaborate plan to send. I don't know. He sends volts around the world to blow himself up.
Apparently, for some reason, he says I can't commit suicide myself. For some reason, even though no one's programmed you or anything.
Yeah.
So
what he's saying is, I cannot self-terminate.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, fair enough. Just because you found like a way around it, which kind of
you're right. It is still him doing it.
Yeah.
It's like it is like the Terminator saying, "I cannot self-terminate. This molten metal will have to do it for me," and then just jumping into the pool himself.
Yeah, but that logic, I can't kill myself, but gravity can if I jump off a building.
This bullet will.
But like, it basically uploads itself to the radio waves, his consciousness, and kills his physical form with an electricity bolt from around the world or something. And then he
explodes.
Yeah. And then he surfs the audio waves and I don't know, he essentially becomes a crap DJ who can affect what plays on the playlist. And just
the whole world dances to Electric Dreams.
Yeah, and basically lets Miles go off with his girlfriend who, like, basically just go, "Oh, I love you, Miles, because you're nice and stuff," and a lot of bullshit that the film didn't establish. And Miles is like, "Oh, it wasn't about the music or my computer all along," even though that's the only attraction you actually lies, had.
All the fucking lies he told and how
Alcatraz is a very romantic place, all right? That's what does it. And being slapped in the cinema, that's great.
He slaps her in the face and he says, "Hey, if you enjoyed going to prison on a date, you're going to love the rest of this relationship."
But they you know, they get to hop in a car together and drive off and live happily ever after. And then Electric Dreams plays because Edgar is sentient. And yeah, he kind of becomes... it's like the film Lucy, Abby. Do you remember we saw Lucy? Is it that where she becomes... She kind of moves to another plane or something. She kind of... Am I thinking of the right film?
Is that the one where she partially becomes some black goo?
Yeah, do you know what? I am mixing it up with another film. And that will be a spoiler for that film if I say it now. It's the film Her. The film Her as well. There's a lot of similarities to that.
It's if anyone ever saw the original first movie version of Ghost in the Shell, where an artificial intelligence emerges from the internet because of like the soup of information.
Not the champagne of information.
Binds with the main character and then goes off into the internet at the end of the film. Kind of this, and also the Lawnmower Man, like I said, when Job disappears and all the phones ring.
Yeah, this stupid computer transcends into a fourth plane of existence, or the radio waves, whatever you want to understand. He lives on in the ethos. Maybe he's the consciousness of the internet or something. We don't fully appreciate it, but music's playing, the credits are rolling, we don't care.
There is, though, that montage of people in various public places just dancing to the song Electric Dreams.
To emphasise how fun the film was.
Well, that's what I was going to say. When that happened, I thought, why wasn't that the whole film that just happened? Like, why wasn't the rest of the film that silly if they're going to go for that for the ending?
It's just basically bigging up how good that song is. And it is good, but we don't need construction workers dancing and like people just jiggling their ass to the beat. I mean, it's really weird. And it's after such a melancholy, the computer almost accepting its limitations and giving in to Miles because he's too much of a dick to bother with.
Miles and I don't even remember Virginia Madsen's character.
Cello lady.
After Edgar blowing himself up, presumably as well, he had to pay for the damage to that fucking apartment. And also,
he's got that brick that he's invented, the jigsaw brick, which is clearly genius.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So he'll be a little bit.
But now they're driving off, perfectly happy, to spend 2 weeks away from any technology. Which spending 2 weeks with no distractions with Miles sounds like a fucking nightmare. But also, they're now perfectly happy, whereas they've just murdered a new life form. Like, not murdered it, but like depressed it and driven it to suicide.
And Miles doesn't even care.
The whole
arc of his narrative should have been he learns to care at least a little bit for this AI he's created. No. That, if anything, it ties everything up in a nice fucking bow for him, the selfless fucking stupid computer piece of shit.
Doesn't have to worry about it now, does he?
No. And his life is just, you know, he couldn't have done worse to the computer and it couldn't have worked out better for him.
The ending would have been better if the message through the radio was directed at Miles and it was like, "I'll find you, Miles.
I didn't kill you." He becomes fully Hal. He just, "I didn't kill myself. Yeah. I have myself.
I'm still out there.
I'm going to get you, moles."
One day I'm
coming. The song they should have played is "I'll Be Watching You."
Just, psychologically torture him with songs on the radio and stuff. Oh, well.
There
thanks,
it is.
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for suggesting it way back when, and then me suggesting it again to do for us this time.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. The first time you watch it, it's just a kind of ball of crazy 80s insanity, and it's kind of fun, but it doesn't last.
Whenever you look it up, it's one of those films that people on like movie forums and IMDb or whatever will be like, oh yeah, it's an 80s cult classic. Fuck off, it is.
Yeah, it's a suicide cult.
Admit that it's shit. There are plenty of films out there that are, you know, cult classics, and some of them are legitimately like shabby but great fun. Ugh, this is not one of them. It's so aggravating and just
Yeah, it's. I think it's extra frustrating because it has the potential to be a really interesting one, and it just utterly kicks it over the fence into shitville straight away. Yeah, it's a shame. Better for time though, guys. We should think of something. I can't remember what we went with the original time. I think I could even play it if it saved us doing it again.
I formed one out of my dropping something under the sofa thing earlier.
You did. That was perfectly functional.
I've added something a bit to it, which I think sums it up a little bit better. It's like you've written the final draft version of the script for this film. And for argument's sake, say it was never made, you're making it now in 2016. So you've written it on a laptop, you've got the final draft, which is better than this, and you've saved it on a USB stick, and then you've dropped that USB stick through a fold in the sofa. And now you've gotten down on the floor, you're reaching for it, and exactly the same scenario again. Every time you manage to grab it a little bit, it slips away from you. It's a genius study of artificial intelligence, or a very well put together and touching romantic comedy that you've all involving technology, and you've saved it on a USB stick, and you can't grab it. And every time you try and grab it, it slips away a little bit further.
So you're saying that the film is a struggle of reaching for its full potential.
It's almost there. Almost got it.
But instead, you're just a twat with his arm stuck in an inanimate object.
Instead, you are lying on the ground with your arm under your sofa. And you could just get up and move the fucking thing and pick it up. But you won't. It's apparently too much effort.
Yeah.
So you just make a bunch of music video montages instead. Fuck it.
That's good. Who's got one?
I think I can remember the analogy from the first one that we did. And it was kind of a really obsolete technology, like the 1.0 version of something. So it's like, for example, the phone. Like the first mobile phone was like massive and wasn't really that mobile, but the essence, like the idea, was brilliant. Like someone had put their passion and all their focus into this one thing. And it's there, it's bare bones, it's massive, it's not really that functional, but there it is. And like looking back on it now, when we have like smartphones that can do pretty much anything, it looks like just like nothing. Just an obsolete technology, which, you know, was probably really good and innovative at the time, but kind of just looking back on what we have now, it's so kind of quaint and like cumbersome.
It's kind of like that old laptop that Abby had years ago. I remember going around your house and seeing it and being like, oh wow, that's really cool, and then you open it and try and use it and you go, ugh.
Back when laptops were actually thick and kind of beige.
But yeah, and not really a laptop, because that thing will break your legs if you put it on there for too long.
Can you vouch for the laptop, Abby? Did it exist?
Is it I was just having a fit of nostalgia. It was beige.
That's I'm going to say that's kind of where our kind of audio adventures started, was with that laptop.
I stole that from my dad.
You still have it?
I don't have it. My dad probably still has it.
Probably propping up a coffee table or something. But yeah, we recorded some audio bullshit on it back in the day, didn't we?
We did.
Oh, that's kind of a nice origin for this, that we've turned into a rambling load of bullshit that with a point rather than just sound bites that make us laugh. Abby, do you have a metaphor?
I do. I had to do some mild research while you were talking so that I can clarify which one it is. There is a game called Mr. Game. It's by a brand called Clementoni.
Okay.
And I had it in my youth. And it was one of those 20 games in one type deals, but they decided to make it look like a little man, and he was terrifying. Because he just called? Had this Mr. Game. Because he had his torso was t-shirt shaped, and that's fine, because that's where all the boards go. But then he had really giant feet, because that's where all the counters went, and he had these really tiny arms, and his face is a really smiling face, but he had no nose, just a hole where you were supposed to get a ball bearing into. That was a game. And I think of Mr. Game because this film is many confused ideas, none of which are capitalized on and don't fit together in a coherent way. So they've made a film on a technical level. It's a film, but in no way, shape or form is it actually pleasing functionally.
I imagine it. I think from what if I remember the right thing, like it is a kind of ugly looking thing as well, because it's sort of a hollow plastic thing with board games, and it's just kind of unpleasant, but trying to give you everything you want and just succeeding at nothing. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, like, Mr. Game probably actually fulfilled it a little better in the film.
Well, there's some good music. There is some good in the Electric Dreams, I guess. But I like the metaphor, if that's what you're going with.
Yeah.
For mine, I'm going to say the whole film comes across like... It's rather than an Electric Dream, it's kind of an Electric Nightmare, or even an Electric Fever Dream. Like, I remember watching music television. I think it was like on after a New Year's Eve party, and just lying sideways on the couch watching like music television, like watching MTV2, and being a bit hungover, not hungover yet, but kind of tail end of drunk, and sideways watching it, and then falling asleep, and your dreams start to blend with the weird music videos you've seen. And it's just a confusing image of like, and so I think some of it was like nostalgia driven, like 80s music videos, and a lot of them were very heavy on the 3D graphics to go, look, we have a man who can move around a bit while Phil Collins sings some bullshit.
Fucking Money for Nothing, Dire Straits video.
One of them I was thinking of, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like, so you're taking it in, and your dreams start to meld with what you've seen, so it's just a confusing mess of music and just dreamy thoughts. So it is kind of like a horrible drunken fever dream that doesn't make any sense.
Certainly think ahead, you know, a few decades. Maybe I'm in an old people's home and I have flashes back to Electric Dreams and I think, did that film exist or did I dream it?
Or am I having a stroke? Yeah, so for me, the whole thing is like watching a drunken dream unfold that was influenced heavily by music videos.
The same feeling after this had finished.
Nausea and frustration.
That I have from a particularly unpleasant but not like nightmarish dream. Just one that's weird and uncomfortable, and you wake up going, ugh. That's kind of how I felt after this ended.
Yeah. I'd say that. There were some lols, I would say. Because it was like a good New Year's Eve party. You'll have some fun. But by the morning, you'll have regretted spending the time watching the film anyway.
If you're an 80s completist and you're looking to watch every film made in the 80s, then we recommend this one.
I mean, you've got more problems than that. Yeah. Anyway, so thanks for joining us and listening to us vent. And hopefully this recording will be fine and we won't have to do it for a third time. Either way, we're done for now. So it's time to say goodbye. Meh, bye, bye.
I want to touch her.
Fuck you, Moles. Oh, my laptop's come up with a message. What do you mean you're download? No! Rich?
Rich? I guess that's the end of the show.
Together in Electric Dream, we'll always be together, blah 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 blah. It's okay, me and my laptop, I'm not stupid, and I'm not anything it does for me. I'm very grateful, thank you laptop. We did go through that trouble patch, didn't we, when we couldn't record properly, but we got over it.
Yeah,
so that's time to end the show, right, guys?
Indeed.
Bye.
Bye.